The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
After days of rain and wind and more rain, another status yellow rain warning is in place for seven counties today, and further flooding is also expected in the Dublin area. As people are continuing to grapple with the damage to their homes and businesses caused by Storm Chandra, one union is now calling for the government to protect workers from extreme weather, as well as introducing something called climate leave. How will it work? Is it actually feasible? Well, to explain all of this is Tom Fitzgerald from Unite. Tom, good morning and welcome.
Good morning to you and your listeners, Pat. Thanks very much for having me on.
Now, let's talk about what you bring to this particular discussion, because you did a survey of your members after Storm Eowyn, which is a pretty bad storm. What did that survey reveal?
So the survey revealed, and it took place in both the north and the south of Ireland, with around 15 respondents, probably roughly split in half. And that revealed a range of kind of detailed issues that workers might look for, and all under the umbrella of protection for workers. But concerningly, in the survey, about a quarter of the workers were obliged to go to work despite the fact that they were there was a red alert warning across the country, as you remember at the time. And out of those workers, 56%, unsurprisingly, said they felt unsafe going to work. But another 48% said they felt unsafe in work because of the circumstances and where they were working. And so from that perspective and our experience in the workplace in dealing with these things on an ongoing basis, and I think it's clear now at this point in time that these are not rare events, they're regular events. Our argument is that the legislation for protecting workers hasn't kept pace with climate change and all the implications, as we've seen this week, and it's looking like it's going to be over the coming days as well.
Now, talk to me about the kind of workers that you represent who would be fearful of going to work if there was an orange or red warning out there.
Well, we represent workers across all the various sectors in the economy, so all workers are at fear in terms of the implications for getting to work. In particular, then in work, there's obviously within the construction sector, within the mining sector, within outdoor workers would have particularly acute fears. Of course, you would. But we want a situation where there's the protections in place, including leave and anti-penalisation provisions within the particular legislation, where when workers have to make a decision, when they look out and they're listening to the weather report and they've done all the due diligence and can make a decision safely and saying, well, actually, I'm going to prioritise my health and well-being, and I know I have a protection there and I can be supported. Because during Eowyn last year, we had examples of workers, you know, I gave an example earlier this week where, in particular, healthcare assistants who were going to on their way to do a 12-hour shift in a public hospital were asked to come in. Their shift started at 8:30 in the morning. They were asked to come in for 5. They were advised they could sit around for those 3.5. But what it really meant was that they'd actually have to leave their home at 4, probably go up about 3, and then go do a 12-hour shift. You can see all the safety implications, not just for those workers, but for the people who they have to look after and so on and so forth. So protections against those measures and an obligation on employers to put mechanisms in place, you know, protocols, discussions, engagements, there's quite a range of things. The detail could obviously be endless. Now, there are circumstances where we have such arrangements in place for employers, and the circumstances where employers will say it was actually really like clarity from the state in terms of exactly what we should or shouldn't do here, because we want to be decent to people, but we don't want to be at a competitive disadvantage to others.
Now, talk to me about what happens currently in the construction sector, for example. Now, if you're finishing off a building indoors, you know, a bit of rain is not going to hurt you if it's not a major storm. But people who work outdoors and they're rained off, who pays?
So there's no legislation other than for workers actually incur the cost in those circumstances. There are some collective agreement among some groups where things like the guaranteed week and so on, it can be in place to protect workers. But generally, workers are left with the choice. And in all sectors, and that's a specific agreement at enterprise level, workers are left with the choice. Either you take the hit for the day, you take the pay, you take the annual leave, you woke up the hours, you make some sort of arrangements with your employer. And you're right about, you know, if people are in work and they're safe, and that's fine. But obviously, a lot of this is about trying to get to work and then get home safely that night as well. There will be examples, a sharp example, like a crane operator. They're always exposed to the elements, but generally your point stands.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't want to be climbing up into a crane in the middle of a storm, even though they are designed, as we see every day, to withstand massively high winds. That's, you know, that the wind passes through them, so you hope they remain stable and safe. They are like a sail. They swing around with the wind so that they don't offer, if you like, a profile to be knocked over by the wind. So that's a very specific case. But there are others who'd be up on scaffolding and so on, and I can see the dangers they would face.
Yeah, absolutely. Of course they would. And actually, just you're right about the crane, the modern cranes are, but the load isn't. If they're lifting a skip or something like that, that's and the point being is we have some up there. So there's all sorts of mechanisms in the construction sector to deal with, when these extreme weather events are ongoing and what should or shouldn't be done. There's a lot of mechanisms in place there. There are circumstances, and it's very good employers who say, actually, do you know what, we're not going to put anybody in harm's way. And there's very bad employers who say, do you know what, we have to rush and get the job done. The point that we're looking for, we want to arrive at a point where there's clear protocols across the board, so there's no ambiguity, so workers can point to protections. Good employers can point to protocols how things can be done. And it's a positive. IBEC and others have similar type of calls out there. It's the legislation, the protocols, the role of the state is just not in keeping with where we are from a climate perspective at the moment.
I have a text here. On several occasions, I've had to work during red weather warnings. I'm an airline pilot. What would happen if I had an accident regarding car insurance? In other words, trying to get to the airport to fly a plane. Would I even be covered? Some employers simply have zero consideration for their workers, and all they care about is keeping the operation moving. And there's a kind of an issue here, too, that there are some staffs who are vital to, you know, keeping the show on the road when people are suffering, whether they're electricity workers or fire service workers or whatever. They've got to keep doing their job. It's like the RNLI going out to rescue someone at sea when no sane sailor would go out. They go out because that's what they do. So there comes a point where you have to ask, you know, who has to work in these situations and how should they be compensated?
No question. And in particular, we talk about the need for identifying what constitutes essential worker in a booklet that we produced yesterday, and how we think that would be done. That would be, you know, in agreement with the employers, agreement with the state, identifying those essential workers. And obviously, these workers will be critical in those circumstances. And that's another point about having appropriate provisions in place where workers can make the decision to protect their health or their wealth. So it doesn't actually bring these other workers out who were essential and required and put those in harm's way. Our colleagues in situ yesterday actually called for a specific compensation for workers and local authorities in some circumstances. And again, indicating, you know, the government is actually a step behind this real experience for people on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah. Now, the question is, what can the government bring in? What kind of rules and regulations, protocols that you mentioned, can they bring in that will be just and fair? Because, for example, if you are living in a place that happens to have a red warning, but you're driving to a place of work which has no warning at all, I mean, the government would be saying, why should we pay because someone chose to live in a place that happens to be hazardous at the moment?
Yeah, well, I doubt anybody particularly picks a place and says we're going to actually put ourselves.
No, for example, if you are living on a flooding plain, and we know that councils gave permission for lots of houses to be built on flooding plains during the Celtic Tiger, so you're living there. There's no problem anywhere else except in your field where your feet are underwater. You can't get your car out of the drive. The state might be saying, "Well, why should we compensate someone simply because they live on a flooding plain?"
Well, you'd imagine in those circumstances there would be, in a specific case like that, there would be, you know, a liaise between the local authority, the state, and with a view towards having a longer term resolution to such a problem. But what we're raising is in the general here, where workers are forced to a situation where they can't get to work, they should be protected. There should be no basis for them being penalised for making the decision not to go to work. There should be paid leave for that in the way it exists in other circumstances. And there should be an ongoing discussion about, you know, we've seen some really horrific and long-term impacts upon people. What does actually further force majeure leave look like? And we can see examples in Spain. Now, again, we're not being, you know, absolutely prescriptive. We're saying these things should be provided. This is what's happened in Spain. But the problem so far, Pat, is with the government and the officials in the department, or the officials themselves, particularly health, and we've had very little response from government. they haven't said, okay, we recognise we're behind in terms of the situation and we recognise the need for those protections, including leave. Let's discuss how it'll happen. Bearing in mind all the factors, the practicalities, those particular examples you point to, and also our capacity to pay and to do all that we can do. But that fundamental prison hasn't been raised. So currently we're raising these points in the vacuum.
Some of the texts come in. Legislate so that the employers bear the brunt once again. It's not the employee's fault, but it's not the employer's fault either if they can't get to work. That's okay, but no pay or take it out of annual leave, says that texter. Weather warnings, congestion don't affect the so-called working from home, just the eejits who have to go out to work. And there's certainly a case to be made there. My job is largely carried out outdoors. Whenever someone asks me what I do when it rains, my answer is simple. I get wet. That's from Emmett. The last point really, Tom, is whether or not, you know, we're a bit too soft and disorganized here. Other countries have massive weather events all the time and people are geared up to get to work and do it safely.
Well, yesterday, Pat, at our press conference, Mark Campbell spoke. He's the father of Matthew Campbell, electrician, a 24-year-old electrician who went to work in the context of Storm Ali in 2018. And he didn't come home because a branch fell, crushed him. His father's contention was, yesterday, if those protections are in place yesterday, he would have been home with his family. So, and the key point in health and safety is this. If it can be anticipated, if it's possible and if it's avoidable, something should be done about it. And we're making the point something should be done about it. And that point about, you know, capacity to pay needs to be considered. There will be small employers, there will be businesses out there who will struggle to do this. Again, we need the principle. This needs to be looked at. And who's best placed to pay, be it, you know, better off businesses, government, whatever the case may be. But the point is that government needs to engage in this with the trade union movement. We had the president of the UCTU at our event yesterday as well, engage with the trade union movement and say, okay, we're going to put something in and we're going to ensure that protections for workers catch up with the reality of climate change that we're all now living through.
Tom Fitzgerald, Unite Regional Coordinating Officer, thank you very much for joining us.
News Talk's Cash Machine.
It contains the princely sum of €200,000, which will be won by a guaranteed winner this day week, the 6th of February. It's a huge chunk of change and a real problem-solving amount of money. Just think of what you could do with it in 2026. To enter, text PLAY to 57557 before 3 next Friday, or alternatively online by visiting newstalk.com/cashmachine. There you'll find our terms and conditions. Over 18s only, you're playing across the GoLED network of stations. The cost, €2.50 plus any network charges. After 3 this day week, during Moncrief, we'll randomly make a call. If it's to your phone, answer within 5 rings, tell us the amount in the machine and we will give you the money. But if you don't answer, we keep calling until we find our winner. That amount again, €200,000, and it's tax-free. Text PLAY to 57557. Couple more texts here. I work as a ranger for ESB on hydroelectric waterways. Mainly I inspect the integrity of water safety civil structures and embankments. When it comes to a red warning, I cannot sit inside and wait. I'd never forgive myself if something happened and I was on my ass in the office. Another response, climate days, get a grip. Next we'll have sunshine days and doggy days.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.